Hi, my name is Jen Roulon, and you may know me as Coach Jen. After knocking out 15 Ironman triathlons, I am an everyday healthy human just like you. In this podcast, we will discuss how to metamorphosize into an everyday healthy human through healthy physical habits and mindsets, as well as authentic living. Let's transform together in this journey called life and become the best everyday healthy human ever. Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Everyday Healthy Human Podcast. I am your host, Jen Roulon, and you may know me as Coach Jen. Well, today I have a guest, Heather Fuseli, who I connected with on a podcast platform, just on guests and speakers, and she also has her own podcast. And I was very intrigued with her journey, because I think this is going to resonate with a lot of people, because a lot of it's going to be about nutrition, mindfulness eating, and all of that. So Heather, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jen.
So tell the followers a little bit about you. Give me that, 2 minute elevator speech.
Oh gosh, 2 minutes. Well, my name is
Heather
Fuseli.
It's okay, you can go longer.
I was born. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
A lot of folks know me as Healthy Heather. I've been Healthy Heather for about 15 years that I've been working as a professional health coach. I'm a board certified health and well-being coach. I also work with organizations as an employee well-being consultant. So I work with individuals to help them reach their health goals, live healthy, balanced lives. And I help organizations create work environments where their employees can thrive.
Amazing. On a personal level, though, I think you have a pretty incredible story that I think a lot of people are going to resonate to, because like you said, you weren't always healthy.
Well, I think most of us who work in health and well-being, especially those who seek credentialization in this as a profession, come from a interest in helping others and also in health and wellness, but also from a very powerful personal experience. And for me, I just have always been interested in the human body performance, fascinated by the Olympics and elite athletes and kind of adventure and extreme sports of how far can you push yourself and what can you achieve if you really try. But when it came to me actually figuring out what that meant for myself, I wasn't an athlete. I was kind of just a bookworm theater nerd kid who wanted to be a writer, who also just had this drive to explore this. And, I think that also as an adult, we all just get kind of put onto a track of life that starts to take us in a direction. And for me personally, I was working in kind of a real job in nonprofit management for about 15 years. And coaching just kept pulling at me. People were always coming to me, wanting to work with me as their coach, asking for guidance, asking for help, because I was involved in a lot of health and fitness things as hobbies. And it became more and more a centerpiece of my life rather than a side part of my life. But I had to go through my own personal journey as well, learning about how to trust my body, how to understand what my priorities and values were, how to understand what my goals really were. And I feel like now I'm, almost to the end of my 40s, and I've experienced a lot of really cool things that I wouldn't have if I didn't get curious.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Welcome to the end of your 40s. I'm 51. So I feel you. I get it. I told you, this isn't all about triathletes or runners or anything, but you did say you've done a triathlon or numerous. So can you share a little bit about that and that little journey? Because I want people to know that, you do have a fitness background, and you're not just throwing stuff out and talking about health.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I actually started out as a runner. So I started running in high school, honestly, because I just felt called to it. I just felt like I needed to run. And my dad was a runner, and I really wanted to go running with my dad. And he would run marathons and kind of like long distances. And I started running, not in any real formalized, environment, like on a track club or cross country or anything like that. But running stuck with me. It just felt right to me. It felt like a good zone for me. And I continued running through college. College is where I kind of started venturing beyond 3 miles and now I'm done, kind of exploring, what else could I do here? And in fact, in college is when I became an accidental dog walker because I ran in the neighborhood behind my dorm that I lived in. And an elderly member of the neighborhood thought that because there were some dogs that always followed me, I must be a dog walker. And so he put his dog's leash on the edge of the fence and asked if I could take any more dogs. And so for a full semester, I ran his dog through the neighborhood as well, which was extra motivation. When I got out of college and started being like, like a grown up, I was still running in my neighborhood. And I got the idea that I'd like to do the Women's Tri-Fitness competition. And this is a 140-yard obstacle course that is based in Tampa, and it's super, super awesome. If you just Google Women's Tri-Fitness, you'll see this event. Hopefully, you will not see the video of me doing the obstacle course, but it was the type of thing that was so out of anything I've ever done before, but I was curious to see, could I do this? And it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a one and done for me because my skill set definitely in endurance sports. But sure. After that, a friend said, why don't you try doing a triathlon? That could be fun too. And so I did a sprint triathlon probably about 13 years ago. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I would definitely do it again if I had the time to dedicate to all of the training. But really, for me, it's endurance running. I'm a marathon runner. I'm an ultra runner.
You're an ultra runner. Yeah.
It's what I love. Yeah. Running.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask you about the obstacle course. Was it like pull-ups or rope climbs or crawling underneath, like almost like a Spartan race?
All of that. Yeah. So
all of that. Okay. And running.
And some running. Yes. So the way that specific event took place, it was over a weekend. And on the first day we had kind of skill races like shuttle run and body weight percentage of bench press and box jumps and things like that. Just real athletic plyometric stuff. And then the next day was the obstacle course, which was, see if I could remember how the whole thing went.
It just sounds cool. That's all.
Yeah. You climb over a rope wall, you jump over hurdles, you do a shuttle run, you climb up a rope, a cargo net, flip over and jump off, like all that kind of stuff. And it's just a rush. And it's a timed event. But for me, it was all about finishing it. And like, can I actually do this in this bookworm theater nerd body that I have?
Yeah. And that's what I love about like what you just said, Buzz. It wasn't about time or anything. It was about finishing. And here you were, a bookworm, a theater nerd, not thinking that you were an athlete, but you are an athlete.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had that same story in my head that I was like, well, I don't run, but I play softball. I'm a cheerleader. I play volleyball, but I'm not an athlete. And it's just that story that we play in our head over and over. And here you are running your whole life, not thinking that you're an athlete, but you are you are. And you've continued that path, which is amazing.
I think that a lot of people have that feeling of the word athlete, meaning that you must be good at a sport or that you win things or you're part of a team. And I love running. I love exercise. I wouldn't say I'm good at it. I'm not that good at it. I'm just really stubborn and I enjoy it. And so, sure, I think that, I guess that makes me an athlete if I'm participating in an athletic event.
Heck yeah, it does.
But I don't think anybody wants me on their team.
Stop. Don't say that. So then the question, let's go into this because I saw a question that you had on the platform. It says, how can I train for a 13.1 or 26.2 marathon if you run slow? So can you give maybe two pieces of advice for people that do want to start off considering they might not be an athlete?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll add into my bio, I'm also a certified running coach, so I work with folks on putting together that plan. So when I get an idea of what does this mean for me in my life right now? Like, what is this for me? Is it a, can I do it? Is it, can I improve on last time? You know, just identify what's the objective here. And you don't have to be a fast runner to be able to participate in running events. I mean, unless you want to win. If you want to win, then you got to work on speed. But if you just want to do it and explore what you're capable of, then I really recommend, you know, putting together a structured plan. You can work with a coach on that, or there are lots of free resources online. Hal Higdon is a great place to start. And just, you know, start with some intervals, get yourself going, build up your endurance, and just believe that you can. There's always more there. You know, you're a lot stronger than you think you are. Stay curious and keep it fun.
I love that. Yeah, for me, like I always tell my triathletes that I coach, you know, I'm getting them ready for an Ironman, half Ironman, big, long cycling races, right? But I'm all about, you have to build that engine. Before you start adding speed, you must build that engine. And if you jump that engine too quick from 5 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour, what's going to happen? It's going to be injury. And then you're going to be like, oh, I can't run because I did this or whatever. So I'm a big advocate of build that engine first, then start adding that interval work. And that's, you know, the strength. Actually, you should always add strength, but
and that's so neglected by runners. Runners don't want to do strength training, but take it from us, guys. It's worth it. 2 days, get in there, 20 minutes. You can knock it out.
Bingo.
You'll be glad.
Bingo. Yes. And you're not going to get bulky because it's called specificity.
Right.
Right. You're not going to, because you're going to be running more than you're doing weightlifting, but that's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other show.
Right. Let's talk. I think I really want you to talk about the nutrition aspects and the mindfulness eating, because that's something that I have really rolled with over the last, I would say, year and a half, the mindfulness eating. But can you elaborate?
Yeah, I work with people a lot on mindful eating, and in many cases, that is coming from a perspective of an eating disorder. And as you probably know, eating disorders and endurance athletes seem to, you know, find themselves in the same categories a lot of the time. You know, it's a high achieving, you know, kind of place to be. And eating disorders are good friends with high achieving, goal setting people. So a lot of times it starts with separating the need to earn, in air quotes, your food by exercising.
Yes. Girl.
Yes.
Like, no.
You don't have to earn the right
God.
To eat. Your body has to have food.
Seriously.
Yeah. And I hear that all the time. Like, oh, I earned this. It's like, no, that can be a really slippery slope, because then,
yes.
For example, what happened with me, I have an eating disorder and I'm an endurance runner. And for me, tapering for a race, I know I need to be on high alert for bad past behavior, because if I'm not running a lot, my old brain thinks, oh, yeah, I can't eat as much. And I have to be on alert to remind myself, that's not how this works. Like, you're actually, you know, in partnership with yourself. And so that's one of the first things, is really identifying what is the purpose, like, what are you trying to achieve? And then making sure that your nutrition is a partner with you, not something that you're either dragging along or you're forcing into a box or you're trying to use as compensation for something. And a lot of times with mindful eating, I think that the media has kind of portrayed it as it's just this zen place with food. And, you know, that's part of it. But so much more of it is being intentional about your food and paying attention to how you feel, using your hunger signals, your fullness cues, you know, really thinking about, how do I want to feel after I finish this meal? What's the purpose of this meal right now? How does this complement my workouts or detract from my workouts, or is it neutral to my workouts? You know, there's all of those types of elements go into being mindful about your nutrition while you're also training for an athletic event.
100%. I think that's beautiful. My nutrition coach that I worked with for my last Ironman, she shifted my mindset so beautifully, like you said. I mean, I would go do a 6-hour bike ride and I thought I had to justify eating a burger and fries. Was that the right choice? No, I don't know. I mean, shoot. After the last 4 Ironmans I did, I was like, I'm going to have a donut a day for 7 days and I don't care. But then I wouldn't have a donut for that whole next year, right? Because I was like, I gorge myself. But like, it's so crucial. And what I am seeing, and I'm sure you see this, if you're coaching runners with the nutrition piece, they don't eat enough. And so they get to a point where, one, they can't train because they're fatigued or they're tired. They don't have the engine. They don't have the energy. And they're pretty much their body, they're starving themselves.
And they're so confused. They're confused because they're following the diet. You know, they've gotten something on Instagram or something. And they say, I'm following the diet. I'm counting my macros. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And they've completely lost that communication with themselves and that their own personal body wisdom. And it takes some time to reconnect and really understand what those cues are saying, but it's worth the time if you want to get better at your sport and just have more fun doing it, feel better doing it.
I remember talking to a girl and she was like, yeah, I'm just not seeing results. And so I immediately went to the nutrition piece and I was like, 3 days of journaling, send it to me. And she would send it to me and I was like, you're at a deficit every single day. Like, no wonder you're not gaining or, you know, or losing or whatever you want to do, you know? And it was just interesting. And she had a totally different perspective. And she's like, oh, and I think once you start teaching that to clients and then just to our followers, like, they're like, oh, let me ask you this. Like, what type of tips would you give somebody who is starting that mindful eating as they're trying to maybe lose weight?
Mindful eating is a very popular now first stop for weight loss, but I always want to make sure people know that mindful eating is not necessarily a weight loss tool. Mindful eating is a mindful eating tool. So it's to help you get back in touch with your body signals and start to become a partner with yourself again. Now, as we know, with weight loss, there's some math involved there. You know, mindful eating really doesn't want to put a lot of attention on calorie counting and, you know, all of that type of detail work because we're trying to get that connected to ourselves, not a chart. But with weight loss, you do want to have some type of an awareness of where you are in the range of your calorie intake so that you can do the simple math of how closely does that compare to what my body's needs are. Now, if you've been in an overeating cycle for a long time, meaning that you're eating because of things that are not related to hunger and you're eating more than you need to, chances are when you clue into your hunger signals and you really start practicing that, you're going to lose weight because you are overeating and you're going to be eating less. So you should notice that your clothes start feeling a little bit different. You know, you don't need to jump on the scale. You know, you can tell whether or not your body's changing without a machine telling you. But if you've been in an under-eating cycle for a while, if you've been in restrictive eating, then, you know, that you might notice that you start to feel a little bit like you're not getting the results that you expected because you're actually feeding yourself. And once your body starts to regain trust that you're going to feed it on a regular basis, it'll level out. It's all about just having that trust with yourself that if your body asks for food, you can give it some food and move on with your life.
And it's interesting because you said regaining trust if you are at a deficit, but I also think you also need to regain trust at a overeating, right? Because you have to, it's that trusting, that intuition that, you know, of you sitting there looking at your food being like, what is this doing for me? Like really just having those conversations. And it sounds silly, but in reality, it's going to help you. To me, it's going to help like long-term versus a, a diet.
Yes. And when you're in that overeating cycle and you're looking at food, and you know, one thing that we, a lot of us do is we overserve ourselves way more than we need. And one of the first parts of really starting to eat mindfully is paying attention to when you become full or when you're no longer hungry. And that, if you still have a bunch of food left on your plate, can be a pretty frustrating place to be if you're eating something delicious and you want to keep eating it. And part of that is just taking away the sense of urgency that for some reason this feels like the only opportunity we have to eat this food. But to remember that we're adults, we can package this up and put it in the fridge. We can go out at almost any time of day or night and get almost any food we want wherever we are. So taking away that sense of urgency can just give us some room to breathe a little bit and remember, I am not in a combat situation right now where I have to eat this food or else. I can go back and get more later.
Right. And I think too, growing up, I mean, we're about the same age, you know, our parents were like, got to eat that because there's starving kids in Africa or whatever, Ethiopia, right? And then you would see stuff on television about that. And you're like, oh, I do, I need to finish this. And so I think that can really be into a just a downward spiral as we get older, because we think, I got to finish this.
Right, because that incorporates the shame that I'm so selfish that I have a plate full of food that other people don't have. I should eat this because they don't have any. And if I don't, then I'm bad. And I mean, it just puts so many layers that you can understand why the diet industry is the way it is now, because we're so confused about, am I even hungry? Do I even like this?
Right. I mean, remember back in the days, you know, eggs are good, eggs are bad. I mean, it's just like, it's an ongoing thing. And it's, and I still remember to this day, my, one of my college professors back in my master's degree, he was like, is broccoli good for you or is donuts good for you, you know, or bad for you? And then he's like, but you can't, you know, when people ask me about nutrition, you can't just answer that, right? If I get done with an Ironman, a little piece of broccoli is not going to fulfill me, but a donut a day later will 100% fulfill me. And maybe that's what I'm craving. I'm craving the sugar and the calories like that. But if you're trying to lose weight, maybe the donut isn't. But it's all about, you know, it's not about what this magazine says or this website says. It's about what you need individually. We could sit there and coach all day long, but then that's why coaches have coaches. At least I do.
You know, and I think that happens a lot of bringing my clients back into their own lens, because we go and look through somebody else's lens all day long. And, you know, for one person, you know, it's eating a donut is a simple pleasure that tastes delicious and it satisfies their sweet tooth and they go on with the day. For somebody else, eating a donut could be the trigger for sugar cravings for the rest of the day or week that is just going to, you know, be a distraction and preoccupy them. And for somebody else, a plate of broccoli, sure, it might be filled with nutrients, but if you're eating it uncontrollably and you can't stop, then it's torture. You know, you have to look through your lens and just honor that.
Yes, agreed. There's a meme of a little girl, like she's like, I'm eating healthy, and she's got like a piece of celery, but then she's got a load of peanut butter on it, you know? It's just like, oh my gosh, you're right. And, you know, then you just have to add some raisins to it, you know,
right,
and then
yeah.
You got ants on a log, right?
Yeah. And did she even ask, am I hungry? Or was she just given a snack because it's snack time?
Right. Oh my goodness. I didn't even think of that. Whoa. Well, Heather, you have given us some incredible nuggets that I know my followers are really going to appreciate. We got a couple minutes. I do want to ask you, what is one habit somebody could change today?
A habit somebody could change today, well, gosh, that's up to them. I would say that in order for them to be able to determine that would be start pressing pause. Just give yourself some space to breathe and check in with yourself. before you barrel into a decision. You'll be able to be much more mindful with any choice that you make.
Where can my followers find you?
My website is heathersolveseverything.com. That's the same as my podcast. And this episode, this season of the podcast is all about mindful eating. But you can also find me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Heather Solves Everything. If you just Google Heather Solves Everything, you'll see.
Great. And I don't worry, y'all. I will put that all in the show notes, of course. So, of course, I have one more question. And you might have already answered it, but it's almost like a little wrap up, right? So I want to share with my followers about maybe a transformation that you went through as your own beautiful butterfly. What lesson did you learn about yourself? And I know we talked about you went from a butterfly, and I'm sure you're flying like a hawk, which is beautiful. But I'm all about the transformation of a butterfly. So maybe go to one of your experiences, and maybe that will help somebody.
I love the butterfly analogy because, you know, you go from this like icky, gooey caterpillar in this blobby thing of a chrysalis, and then you emerge as this beautiful butterfly and fly off for your adventure. And I think there's probably like 12 Heather butterflies out in the world, and they all look completely different, you know, because we change into different forms of butterfly throughout the different seasons of our life. But for me, I think that it really was when I transitioned from marathon running into ultra running. And what I mean by that is taking the emphasis off of my pace. You know, when you're running half marathons and marathons, it's all about the finishing time. You know, you like every marathon runner will tell you, I just want to finish. But inside her head, there's a time that she wants to be or meet. And you just get so tunneled down into that that it takes away, for me, took away some of the fun. Ultra running, on the other hand, is all about going the distance. It's the sky is the limit. And that for me, I mean, I feel like a butterfly right now just talking about it. I feel like my arms are spreading out and like I'm about to take flight, because the liberation of not being held to any type of an expectation means that it's just it's limitless of what you could achieve that day. And that was a real transition moment for me when I decided to join the rank of ultra runner. And, you know, just, you know, I've done 3 ultra marathons. It's not like I'm elite, but I show up, I do my best, I have fun with it. And I mean, that's all that you could ever expect. And if you're just showing up and having fun, you are winning.
Beautiful. You are winning 100%. I talk about ultra marathoners, like y'all are at a different level. I know I've done 15 Ironmans and I've been, you know, I've done all that, but y'all are at a different level and I can't comprehend it. So kudos to you.
Thank you. I hope to join you someday in the Ironman competition. We'll see.
There we go. Yeah. So follow up is have fun and show up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
I love it. Well, thank you, Heather, for joining me on the Everyday Healthy Human podcast. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. If y'all are liking this podcast, the Everyday Healthy Human podcast, you know what to do. You know that you need to share, you need to like, you need to make comments. You need to send me an email, jen@jenroulon.com, to find out if there's any other topics that you want to hear about. Because remember, here, I'm combining my Costa Rica and my Texas world. Pura vida, y'all. Pura vida. Ciao.